Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose. I'm your host, Jose Palomino, CEO of Value Prop Interactive. And our guest today is Paul Riley. And Paul is a sales expert. And one of the reasons we wanted him on the show is he's recently wrote a book about selling through tough times. That's the title for this episode as well. And has real insights on how to really think about the adjustments and the approaches you need to sell during tough times, and the fact that we're always going through tough times. There's rarely is there a time where everything is clear sailing for everybody, but there's a way and approach to be successful no matter what. So let's listen closely as Paul joins our show right now. Well, welcome, Paul, to Business Growth on Purpose.
Hey, Jose, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So Paul, just for our listeners to get immediate context, what do you do and who do you do it for?
Yeah. So I'm a professional speaker, author, and sales trainer. And what I do is I help companies go out there and compete more profitably by selling on value and not price. And how I do that is through training seminars, keynote presentations, and consulting and coaching with my clients. What I'm known for really is Selling Through Tough Times. That's my latest book that just came out. And then also Value Added Selling. That book is now in the fourth edition with McGraw-Hill. So that's what I do.
Wow. Okay. So if I were to summarize that, you help professional sellers sell better based on a couple of key principles is really a good way to tackle that. And it's one of the reasons I was excited to have you on the show, because that's a topic that never gets old, right? I mean, so long, you know, when I've done any kind of sales training, I always tell the teams, I said, if your employers could replace you with robots, they would, but they can't.
That's right.
So one of those, probably the last jobs to get replaced with robots. But so here we are, what we hope is a post-pandemic world, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of turmoil, a lot of stuff up in the air. You know, again, you know, we're hearing, you know, predictions of recession. Certainly we're living through extraordinary inflationary times. And I lived through the first last wave of that in the late 70s, which is, you know, kind of crazy times of 20% inflation, 20% interest rates at the same time, which is really tough. So the question I wanted to start exploring with you, Paul, as you're out there, and especially in industrial categories, you know, B2B, what's changed? You know, has the pandemic changed selling and buying substantially? Are things basically the same but different in some key ways? I think that's a really interesting thing for people to lean into and say, okay, what do we have to be prepared to do differently than maybe we were thinking selling was 3 years ago?
Sure. Jose, that's a great question. And I've got a couple of thoughts on what has changed. Some of it is backed by data. You know, when I'm out there surveying my clients, interacting with salespeople, others just, you know, anecdotally, what I'm hearing from salespeople. So I'm happy to offer some thoughts on both. One thing that I have noticed, and you've likely have noticed this as well, over the past few years, and a lot of this I think is triggered by the pandemic, buyers are less willing to meet with salespeople face to face. That's something that I've seen, and not just you know, like a cold call type setting, but just having an actual meeting. They're less likely to engage with the salesperson. They're less likely to have that meeting request go through, and I've been seeing that for. It was trending that way before the pandemic, but when the pandemic hit, it was like, okay, they're no longer meeting with salespeople as
much. And Paul, if I could just to clarify that just a little bit further, you don't mean just the willingness to meet physically in person. You mean to meet at all.
Right. Correct.
Okay. Yes. That's really hard to sell if I can't meet with a prospect.
It is. It absolutely is. And you know what's interesting, Jose? I think the pandemic helped take the mask off of what's happening in the sales world and reveal a problem that has been there for a while. And here's the reality. A prospect or customer is not going to meet with you unless they believe they're going to gain some value from that interaction. And so you've got buyers, you know, whether it's a B2B setting, whatever it is, they're telling themselves, okay, why should I meet with this salesperson? What am I going to gain from it? I've met with thousands of salespeople and I've sat there. It's been a waste of time. And so I think that what's happened is that the pandemic has really taken the mask off a problem that has been there for some time.
And is that primarily driven by the fact that, you know, let's say going way back, and, you know, as my kids would say, when the dinosaurs, you know, roamed the earth, right? So, so, you know, selling used to, and I started selling in high-end technology categories. That's where I started my sales career a long time ago. And so information about our products, about how technology worked, was really what the salesperson had to be ready to communicate and deliver.
Yep.
But today, any company selling anything worthwhile is communicating that through other means. They have a ton of video on their website. They have content, all of that. So is part of it that buyers think they can learn what they need to learn on their own, and they don't want to be pushed, so to speak? Is that part of the psychology of what's going on?
I think you're absolutely right, Jose. It's the greater access to information. That's where salespeople had a significant advantage, is because they could walk into a meeting and they could sit across from a buyer and they could confidently share information that they know the customer doesn't have already. Mm. And that customer's eager then to hear that salesperson, to learn from them. And that's no longer there, but this has also created another challenge. I think about this, a little information can be a dangerous thing, right? Everyone's got access to Google. For example, Jose, I used to play a lot of basketball, right? And I remember, this is probably like 6-7 months ago, I took a stiff elbow right to the chest when I was playing basketball, and it hurt. I mean, it hurt afterwards for a couple of days. It still hurt. Every time I took a deep breath and I'd breathe in, I'd get a pain in my chest. So I Googled chest pain, trouble breathing. Now, okay. What do you think? What do you think Google told me? They said, "Hey, you're having a heart attack, right?
Right. Get thee to the ER." Right.
So, on the other side of it, a little information can be a dangerous thing, because sometimes our buyers, our customers, they have a false sense of security, in the sense that they think they know something. They think that, okay, I got this video content, I have this all this data available online, I know what I need. When in reality, they don't. But as a salesperson, if we can convince the customer of that, if we can deliver some insight that challenges the way they think, we're going to open up a few more doors as well.
But that also requires, as I'm sure in your training practice, you run into this, that there's a bell curve in terms of seller capacity to have a more strategic conversation. Not every seller is capable of doing that. Not every seller has business acumen. So does that mean we should be, and people who hire salespeople should be thinking of a different skill set? Because all too often, especially in small, but, you know, I tend to serve mostly in the middle market.
Sure.
And they tend to say, well, Larry's really, you know, he's glib, he's good. You know, they go to those classic attributes of like a salesperson almost stereotypically being a certain way.
Yeah.
And yet what you're describing, a value add, is maybe a completely different way.
Absolutely. And Jose, what's interesting, and I'll share just some data points, right? What has changed in sales? You know, we talk about this. What hasn't changed is that for the past several years, past decade, let's call it, when we've been studying top achieving salespeople, we also survey customers and we ask, what do you expect from salespeople? And the number one attribute that continues to be at the top of the list is knowledgeable expertise. Hmm. So, you know, we think about this, what does that say when, you know, customers still have all this information, yet in our research, it shows that knowledgeable expertise is still the most important attribute. There's still that need. And so maybe that could be a criteria when we're looking to hire salespeople and what's important in there.
And also, I think, you know, the way you described about value add, right? I love that thought, right? Of course, it's an initial meeting with somebody. And so that could be a vendor buyer meeting, right? Mm-hmm. Or it could be a more like a true, like a consultant and maybe somebody with a problem meeting, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what are some of the things that you think salespeople have been at the game for a while? Not somebody right out of college, but somebody who maybe is doing this 20 years. What are some of the rewiring things they might have to consider to be good at being that person who shows up as a knowledgeable expert, even at an initial meeting?
Yeah. And Jose, I think it happens before the meeting even takes place and the preparation. One thing we found, and I just shared this with a group on a webinar right before our interview, our research shows that pre-call planning and preparation is really the secret weapon for top achievers. You know, that's the one thing we all know. Hey, we should pre-call plan. We should prepare. We should do all this. Very rarely do salespeople actually do it. So our research shows 95% of top achievers routinely plan every single sales call that they go on. All right. So they, before the meeting even takes place, they're prepared. They know what questions they want to ask. They know the objective that they have in place. They go in there with the information they need. They're anticipating resistance. What's interesting, though, is only 10% of the general sales population routinely plans every single call. So you look at the contrast there, 95 versus 10%. I would say if we're going to rewire our brains, what can we do? First things first, let's make sure we pre-call plan and prepare. And then when you go into that meeting, send the prospect or customer an agenda ahead of time. Hey, here's what we're looking to uncover. Here's what we're going to discuss. And also leave it a little open-ended. Please let me know what else you would like to accomplish on this call. And what we're doing is we're setting an agenda. We're giving the customer a heads up as to what the topics are going to be. That way they can do a little research ahead of time. And then we got to make a promise to them, right? What are they going to get from our meeting? And that could be to deliver some meaningful insight, to share some thoughts on how to improve efficiencies, whatever it may be. We got to make that promise, right? The value proposition. What are they going to gain from it?
Right.
So,
wow.
I think that's part.
And, you know, it's funny. It just brought to mind a long ago colleague of mine who was one of the best successful salespeople I knew. And his name was Tony. And what Tony would do, because we were trained in a very specific sales methodology at this organization, he would tell a prospect, he says, our sales methodology is, and he would describe the sales methodology. He says, I'm going to meet with you and find out these things about you. I'm going to do this kind of research. We're going to have a secondary meeting where I'm going to tell you what I found. And he walked through the whole process so transparently. It was actually disarming. And you had to have a certain personality and he had real skills so he could pull it off. Not, I wouldn't recommend that for everybody, but it was interesting to me because it set expectations and he was always aligned every step of the way with the buyer. There was no mystery to the buyer, what he was trying to do, trying to sell you something, but only if these things make sense to you. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting how letting the buyer know, and maybe not quite as overtly as Tony did, but letting the buyer know what we're meeting about and what maybe you would come out at the back end of this meeting with something that might be good for you is seems like a really top approach. And in your experience, Paul, not many people do either the pre-call planning or setting the agenda or even maybe that follow-up piece at the back end of that.
Yeah, it's interesting how very few salespeople actually do it. And I think part of it is, you know, salespeople are busy, sure. But also I think sometimes they may think, you know, I've called on this type of customer 100 times. I know what their needs are. I know what the problems are that they're facing. So they don't suspend their assumptions before they go into that meeting, which is also a critical part to preparation and that.
And also the customer doesn't feel like, let's say you're right. This is the 10th, you know, refinery. I sell to oil refineries. This is the 10th refinery I'm walking into. And I sell a valve, a thingamabob, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So I know what they need because after all, they all have the same need. But that person I'm talking to doesn't know I know.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a great point.
And won't feel comfortable unless I ask them questions. So let me ask you, do you have any pressure point problems here or whatever with this valve? And they say, oh yeah, I have this problem all the time. Huh, I've seen that before. It seems like such a rich opportunity to just engage. Yeah. And yet it's interesting to your point. A lot of people just won't do that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great point. Great point.
So Paul, what do you see on the buy side, right? So buyers, I thought it was really telling that your research shows that they're not really taking meetings, right? Mm-hmm. Or they're avoiding meetings now. And it's not just in person, you know, afraid of like germs and stuff. It's not even Zoom calls. We're just right. Not meeting. So what are they doing how are they making these buying decisions then? How what are they substituting if they're not talking to people about it?
Yeah. And Jose, I should clarify, you know, I think if you're selling a technically complex, capital intensive, you know, piece of equipment or solution, you know, you're going to get together. They're going to ask questions. You're going to have that opportunity. But in the more, you know, if you're selling a product that is, you know, maybe an industrial supply type product, mm-hmm. where they've got several options and they may view it more as a transaction, they're going to find a way how to make that purchase happen. The challenge, I think, as salespeople is that we need to change our messaging when it comes to scheduling that meeting. And when we were researching selling through tough times, that's one of the questions we asked. Why would you be willing to meet with a salesperson? Right. Mm. So we interviewed a series of buyers time and time again. The number one response as to why a buyer would be willing to meet with a salesperson is because it appears you can help them solve a problem that they're currently experiencing. All right. So if I'm, let's say we're talking to like an industrial salesperson. All right. If they're trying to secure a meeting, whether it is over the phone, face-to-face, in your meeting request, you've got to hint at the problem that you can help solve. And that could be, or rather, a problem that your customer is having. It could be supply chain concerns. It could be logistical issues. At this point, it could be labor shortages. What areas of problems do you know your customers are having? And if you can hint at that in the opening, it's going to increase the likelihood that you're going to get a meeting in there.
So it's not assuming you know everything, but using what you do know, yeah. to create some traction with that prospect to be interested in talking to you about it.
Yeah.
And the tough times. So let's talk a little bit about that. First of all, about your book and how you came about choosing that. I thought it was a great topic, a great title.
Thank you.
Because there is sometimes a sense in selling teams that, boy, I wish I was selling when Larry got into the business, because things were great then, you know. Or they think personally to a time when maybe things were booming for a period of time. But there's always tough times. I mean, damn. Just in the last 20, I'm thinking back going to when I lived in New York, 9/11.
Yeah.
The Great Recession, you know, the reset, the stuff we're going through now, COVID, that's all like in a 20-year period. That's in a career's time.
Yeah.
Like, so what do you think sellers should have to think about? Like even talking about it, like they're tough times, like they're exceptional.
Yeah.
Isn't part of your thought there that, Paul, that these aren't actually not exceptional times. They're actually part of what you always have to work around.
That's right. Jose, tough times have been part of selling since the beginning of sales. Sales has never been an easy profession. You know, sometimes we look at the sellers who have 20 or 30 years of experience, and we got to realize it only took them 20 or 30 years to become that overnight success, right? It's a grind, and tough times come in all shapes and forms, whether it's a new salesperson struggling to perform, an experienced seller taking over a new territory, inflation, a recession, a global pandemic, shortages. I mean, you name it, there are tough times everywhere. But here's the kicker, Jose. Tough times are good. All right. Tough times are good because all of that pain that we experience in tough times, all of that anguish, all of that frustration, that catalyzes positive change in our lives. All of those experienced sellers who are successful that hit President's Club, that do this, do that, every peak of success they've experienced along their career is preceded by a deep valley, because it's through those tough times that we learn to become better. Because since the Great Recession, all right, we've had a pretty good run of it up until the pandemic. I mean, mm-hmm. It was a 10-year economic boom. Good economic times mask bad business behavior. Mm-hmm. And during the tough times, the mask comes off and we get a realistic look at our sales profession, at our business, and we find the cracks. We find what we need to improve. So tough times are good. They're not pain-free. They don't feel good, but they're good.
If you're paying attention, right?
So if, yeah.
Right. So it's kind of like every used car dealer in America thinks they're marketing geniuses now. Right. No, no.
It's true. Yeah.
No, right. It's one of those things where it's like, really? Is it really? You know, and I've talked to some manufacturers, for example. So, oh, yeah, business has grown 30% year over year. And then I asked the tough follow-up question. I said, but are you making any more money? Because they've increased their overtime hours, they're rush charging materials to meet the demands. And that bump in sales, a lot of it comes from their biggest customer that was probably one of their thinnest margin customers to begin with, because big customers always squeeze manufacturers, especially contract manufacturers, for better and better pricing, better terms, and so on. So I've had some candidly say, no, we're actually not making more money. But we're working really hard. And, that, you know, how do you get off that wheel? So tough times. It's interesting just seeing that. And I love the fact that you know, good times can make everything seem like it's working well, but the tough times reveal the truth.
They do. Absolutely.
Wow. So Paul, as we come, you know, round to the end of our time, and thank you so much for stopping by Business Growth on Purpose and really shedding some light on some, I think, really critical things that are very relevant today. Is there any, if you were talking directly to, let's say, a business owner in the middle market looking at these tough times, is there any one thought you'd want them to like grab hold of that could be beneficial to them?
Gosh, there's so much I'd like to like to share with them, but to focus on one aspect, I would say to focus on the right business as we go through the next couple of years, because there could be, you know, as you mentioned, there's rumblings of a recession, and there always is. You know, nobody can predict them 100%, but when there's indicators out there, hey, you got to be aware of them. So as we go through tough times, what I would do is focus with laser-like intensity on your ideal customers. Know who your ideal customers are. Do whatever you can to take care of them. And make sure that you're supporting them, that you're blocking out the competition, and then look for other prospects that fit the same profile, that look the same. All right, so focus on those new prospects. And also, equally as important, maybe even more important, now is the time to shed the dead weight. Those customers that are, we call them the profit piranhas. All right, they are high aggravation, low margin, slow pay. They create internal strife. You're taking a lot of your resources to take care of them. Now's the time to get rid of them. And you can do so in a tactful way. Number one, ask yourself, okay, at what margin or at what profit would this customer be worth it, right? Because let's face it, you may have the biggest pain in the neck customer, but if you're making a lot of money off them,
right,
you can deal with it.
You'll find a way to live with it, right?
Yeah. So find out what that number is. Increase your price to the point where you're going to be making that margin, and explain to them that it's just a business decision. Hey, we can't serve you at this level. Here's what we need to do. Here's why we need to do it. If they decide to leave because of that, use that as an opportunity to free up your resources to support your customers and go after new prospects that are more ideal. That's
I love
the one thing. Yeah.
No, for one thing, that's a great one thing, Paul. I love it. Focus on your best customers, which is great advice. And Paul, if somebody listening to this episode wanted to know more about you, your work, how to get in touch with you, where should they go?
Yeah, absolutely. So I got a couple resources, but since we're in tough times, I'll mention it. The website is toughtimer.com, T-O-U-G-H, timer.com. I think you said you'll have a link on the show notes.
Yeah, we'll have it in the show notes as well.
Yeah, and I got a great offer for your audience as well. When you go to the website, you'll see the book webpage up there. If you click on that, you can actually get a complimentary chapter of my new book. And this chapter is on crafting your customer message. It is it's a go-to template for how to communicate with your customers during tough times. It's tactical, it's practical, and it's there for you at no charge. So check it out there. And also the book's available wherever you get your books and that. And also on LinkedIn, I share a lot of sales-related content on a regular basis. So follow me on LinkedIn and that's it.
Paul Reilly, thank you so much for stopping by Business Growth on Purpose. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks, Jose.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose. If you like the show, hit subscribe and leave us a review to help other people find the podcast. And if you're ready to take the next step in driving intentional growth for your business, come check out what we're doing at valueprop.com. We've developed industry-leading programs and systems to help B2B owners take control of their growth. Until then, thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose.